Donald in the Kitchen talks about food. Donald in the Kitchen talks recipes. Donald in the Kitchen talks about lots of other things on Community Radio. Welcome to the Donald in the Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintos.
We gather here around our kitchen table once a week. Hey, we do this live. We do this live once a week at KHOI Community Radio. We talk about food, farming, advice, recipes, and opinions. And we are glad that you are here at our table with us today. Today, we'll talk about some seasonal things. We'll talk about eggs, hot cross buns, hollandaise sauce, and Donna has some shopping advice for us. Yes, she does. It seems we've had a long, long gray winter. However, during those little breaks in the sun the past weeks, I have had a frog croaking in my pond. I think there's just one.
One frog.
Well, I hope he's got company. There's
And the tree frogs.
Yeah, yeah. You said you heard tree frogs, mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. It's coming. It's coming. Well, this is a time of the year when we have spring Easter celebrations and we celebrate rebirth. It's been going on for a long time. People sort of notice that the long gray winter is kind of getting over.
Yeah, and there is a universal feeling of joy.
Ooh,
we made it through another winter.
Yes, it is. Although we still are watching spring storms and things go through, somehow things are popping up. You said chives are popping up.
The garlic chives are out. My lovage is kind of unfurling from the ground. The motherwort is making its really pretty leaves.
All that early stuff gives us hope. Yes, it does. Well, let's talk about eggs and birds. It seems about the right thing to do. Donna, what news do you have?
Oh, it's a rough time in the old chicken business right now with the avian flu. I think it's been in 25 states at this point, so killing off large amounts of turkeys and chicken. Did I read in the Storm Lake Times that one of the local chicken processors just shut down for a while because there weren't enough birds to process? I mean, it's bad, bad, bad.
Yes, it is. I think that, the Rembrandt Enterprises from Storm Lake had to lay off more than 200 employees after the bird flu outbreak at its facility forced the destruction of 5.3 million laying eggs.
I mean, it's kind of gross what they have to do. You know, it's like if there's bird flu in your, you know, they just have to go in and kill all of them.
All of them. This is not good.
Yeah. Yeah, it's terrible for the farmers, terrible for the chickens. Apparently, we might be having an egg shortage at Easter, for goodness sake.
This is interesting here. This has been all over the weather. I get a farm magazine, and they kind of let us farmers know what's going on. And they have a thing about the avian flu here, and this is from a week ago, the information. It says, Iowa's total poultry losses as of a week ago.
Right, because we are a big egg-producing turkeys.
Iowa poultry loss stood at 13.52 million as of...
Is that dollars or chickens?
Chickens.
Ooh,
the
ouch.
National loss was... 60% of the total losses in the United States happened here because, yes, we are a big producer of eggs. Who would have thought? And I read another statistic that we think of eggs, you know, they come in these handy already packaged little shells. You couldn't design
a marvel of nature.
You couldn't design something better yourself. No. But actually, that is about 30% of Iowa's sales to grocery stores and buying it as individual eggs. They also sell eggs already cracked.
For institutions.
Because all the other cooking that goes on. So just think all of that stuff. So this is going to affect the price of a dozen eggs.
Oh, boy, more inflation news, right?
Well, yes, but you'd think.
I hope we don't try to blame this on any political parties. I mean, after all, avian flu is avian flu. It is neither Republican or Democrat.
Just you listen, Donna. Something may happen here. There are people pointing fingers all over the place. People, oh, actually, they're pointing, believe it or not, to migrating birds. Huh? So,
what are we going to do? Control bird migrations now?
Well, Canada geese, again, we pointed another country. Canada, it must be
it's
Canada.
It's Canada. Oh,
how awful.
My goodness.
How awful. Anyway, the price of eggs, it's about $3 a dozen. I don't consider that a huge price increase because I raise chickens, and I think that's not a high price for me. But for people that are used to paying not a whole lot at discount grocery stores, people are going to notice that.
It's still, even at $3 a dozen or more, it's still a great source of protein. You still get a lot of protein for your buck.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. The USDA says is reporting that the nation has about a five days worth of eggs for its inventory of shelled eggs.
Shelled eggs.
Yeah. In the shell.
Okay.
Eggs. Okay. So, now, that probably wouldn't be noticed much, but we're moving on to Easter, and people are thinking they need lots of eggs.
Well, and we don't think about this, but sometimes an egg that you buy in the supermarket, they have a very long shelf life. They could be, you know, this could be an exaggeration, but I have read that they could be up to 6 months old.
Yeah.
You know, eggs can keep a long time.
Especially if they're cooled off a little bit. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because after all, remember, an egg stays actually pretty good even if you forget it in the nest for a while. It's all right. You might want to candle it to make sure, but it takes...
Well, even then, you're only candling it to see if there's a baby bird
chicken
growing
in it. Yeah.
It's not like you're going to see any infection or anything.
Mm-hmm.
So.
No. That's you found out something about wild birds, and wild birds are also birds. They lay eggs, too.
Here's a headline. This is from the Washington Post science writers. Birds are laying their nests a month earlier than normal. Okay, so... a new analysis published by the Journal of Animal Ecology shows that the average egg-laying dates have moved up by nearly a month for 72 species of birds in the upper Midwest region. And how do they know this? So the Chicago Field Museum has a 120-year-old collection of eggshells, which they were able to, you know, they've been collecting this data for a long time, and they were able to figure out, using the records of bird nesting observations taken in the Chicago area between 1880 and 1920, and then 1990 to 2015, and they determined that over time, the average egg-laying date has moved up for a variety of species in Chicago, an average of 25 days. And they say it's because we're having warmer springs. Well, obviously we did not get that warmer spring this year, but memo to the birds. It wasn't warm this year, in case you didn't notice.
Well, not here anyway. I don't know.
Well, this is an upper Midwest study, so.
Eggs. I have keeping in mind that there are other birds besides just chickens. The USDA is asking bird watchers, hikers, hunters, and other outdoor enthusiasts to report sick or dead birds, any kind of bird, in clusters of five or more. I don't know why that five or more. You'd notice that, I think, if you had five birds.
Oh, goodness,
birds.
If I found five dead birds in my yard, I'd be totally alarmed.
Huh. Anyway, the state says do not handle sick or dead birds.
So this is for the avian flu thing.
The avian flu.
Yeah.
Yeah, so do
who
not.
Who are you supposed to call?
The
Ghostbusters?
The yeah. USDA. Google that, I guess.
Well, yeah. In Ames, you could. We do have the USDA mega operation for, well, isn't it for animal diseases? So right here in Ames, we can just.
There you go.
We could go up to their front gate and report the birds.
Oh.
Oof.
Not good. Not no. good. Also, keep in mind that a lot of this putting chickens down happens in big, confined chicken.
Oh, yeah,
operations.
That's where you get the large numbers.
And they're, if I lived that close to my neighbor, I'd probably catch flu, too. So there you go.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a bird pandemic, basically. It's like COVID for the birds.
Yeah.
And as we have learned, you know, during our own human pandemic, being too many people close together indoors is the worst possible thing you can do.
Yeah, that sounds familiar. I've heard that advice before. Yes. So big ag chickens are noticing this in a big ag way, right? There are also backyard birds. They can also get infected. But luckily, if you get somebody infected out there, maybe you just get rid of your backyard birds.
They're at least out of doors and not as on top of each other. So
yeah, fresh air does wonders. We hope
for all of us
this is taken care of. So we talk a lot about birds. We talk a lot about eggs. So with Easter coming up, how come the bunny, the rabbit, gets to be the one.
Maybe we're going to invent rabbits that lay eggs.
See, we're kind of on science.
Why not?
We already have it in our mythology anyway, I think. Bunny rabbits with eggs. Yes, he does. Okay, good. Bunny rabbits. Of course, they're a harbinger of spring, too, because...
Oh, we've had the massacre of the baby bunnies in our... By the local pets, you know, the baby bunnies are happening.
They are. Oh, speaking of chickens and speaking of chicken challenges, we had a major day of death and destruction. A predator got into our chicken house, so it happens, and killed a number
mink again?
Yeah. Well, not again.
Well, make it into a coat, for God's sake, Lana.
Okay, I will.
At least one of those... Oh, thank goodness this is not the fashion anymore. When my mother was, you know, stylish, they had those wrap, you know, you'd wear a couple of dead somethings around your neck as a fashionable little collar. Oh.
Yes, I remember those.
Those were minks, I think, or sable. Sable or minks, or something.
Something long and skinny. I remember
with the heads on and the glass eyed beads.
With the heads on. I remember being absolutely fascinated.
Oh, me too.
Sitting behind a rather prim and proper older woman who would dress like that for a church Sunday service.
Yes.
And if you sat behind it, I would watch those dead I think they were mink or sable.
Yeah.
The whole service. So.
And they make put these little glass eyes on them that were like just fascinating. Huh.
Okay. Let's get on to happier things. that kind of went down the old hole there for a while, talking about death and destruction.
Well, I can't, every time I think of minks or you say that you've had the minks get into the chicken coop, I immediately think of my mother's, there are two of them.
Stole.
They were
mink stole.
Mink, yeah. Well, the mink stole your chickens, didn't it?
It certainly did. So raising chickens any place is a challenge. And we hope that this bout of chicken avian flu gets over.
I'm trying
soon.
To think, is it 5 years since we had the last go round?
Yes, I believe so.
Something like that.
Oh, dear.
Oh, goodness.
Oh, dear. And here we are moving into Easter. So, eggs for Easter. There's other important things for Easter. I am going to confess here that I always at least like one of these, a peep for Christmas. One of those marshmallow.
The marshmallow peeps.
Somehow,
me? Well, I'm always, of course, prone to the chocolate eggs.
Chocolate bunnies, chocolate eggs, lilies, tulips, Easter baskets. Easter bonnets? As a child, even though I did not clean up very well, I usually had scabby knees, I did get a new Easter bonnet for Christmas.
Absolutely, me too.
Yeah, and you have to wear that thing. It's time to get out those old family pictures and wonder, why did we put those things on our heads? I don't know. Easter bunnies, Easter baskets and Easter bonnets and, oh, see, all these things about Easter. Well, I want to dive into the Donna Lana Kitchen Archives. I was looking around and I found a show where we talked about Easter things. Easter has got lots of things that we do traditions, and it's the onslaught of spring. This, we have to do something. So dyeing eggs seems to be a main thing that we like to do. So let's listen to this audio from a past Donna Lana Kitchen show.
If the children are in the egg dyeing business, somehow they disappear and you have an egg hunt in the morning. But once you've found all those eggs, here you are with perhaps several dozen boiled eggs, right? And some of them are a little squished and, you know.
Well loved.
Yes, right. Some are more beautiful than others. But so there's several things that you can do with hard-boiled eggs. And, of course, the most well-known is deviled eggs. So I would encourage you all to be creative in your deviled egg flavoring. I mean, you know, mayonnaise with a dash of mustard are the traditional things, but, you know, you could put chopped fresh chives or crumbled bacon or horseradish if you want a little twang or all kinds of things. So get creative with those deviled eggs. Or if you don't feel like making deviled eggs, just peel them all up and put them in a jar and cover it with half white wine vinegar white distilled vinegar and half water. And you can drop in some dried herbs, garlic, and let them sit for a couple of weeks or at least a week. And then you will have pickled eggs, and they will still be good in the refrigerator for quite a long time. So don't feel guilty about those eggs going to waste. You know, you get kind of sick of Easter eggs by the end of Easter Sunday, but don't hesitate to make use of them in other ways. Repurposed Easter eggs, right?
Right. And remember, we're talking your original Easter fast food here. They're portable, they're edible, and they're very nutritious.
Yeah, you know, the kids are going to eat the chocolate, so they may eat one egg, and the rest of it's the chocolate bunnies everybody's going for. So,
another possibility for dyeing your Easter eggs, Donna mentioned the colored kits that you can get. You can get some non-toxic colors from grocery stores nowadays, and that's a good idea. You never know what's in the colors. But before you do that, find yourself your kids' coloring box, or the kids can find their own coloring box. Those wax crayons make really nice resists. You can draw all sorts of stuff on there. I would strongly suggest not using washable watercolor markers to draw on the eggs, because it gets all over your hands and all over. It's just you're handling the eggs too much. But if you use some sort of wax to just write your name on the egg, or make some little dots, or make plaid. Plaid eggs are very nice.
So you like to decorate, and then when you drop them in the dye,
right.
The part where the wax crayon is doesn't get dyed, right?
Right. And especially if you use some nice bright colors, like some of the color even stays. Or you can use the end of a candle, too, to just make a clear sort of resist for your put your name on there, right? Happy Easter.
Well, my daughter Diana, who's 40 and still a child at heart, everything's an excuse for our grandson. She just goes crazy at Easter, and so she's in New Zealand. And you know what the problem is there? I have to send her the dye because they don't really do it there.
Oh, really?
All the eggs in the markets there are brown.
Ah,
you really can't get white eggs in New Zealand. So It's been a challenge for our family, you know.
Well, you could still do.
Oh, she still dyes them.
Yeah, and you can use that resist method to make, you'd end up with brown lines, and if you make a nice blue dye, I mean, that's really pretty.
They're kind of cute. Easter egg is an Easter egg.
It is. It's part of our tradition here. Yes. Another thing about the Easter tradition is baking to go with the feast, the tradition of monks and nuns baking something. After all, we're talking about the start of the Eucharist, the Last Supper, the body and blood of Christ. And some of the nuns and monk bakers would get real creative by using their bread to actually create a body of Christ sort of thing that everybody could share. That sounds kind of macabre, but still, that was it. And making shapes, actually making little bunnies or whatever out of your buns, good idea.
Here's the time for the bad joke. What do you get when you pour hot water down a rabbit hole?
I have no idea.
A hot cross bunny.
Oh, yes, you do. Yes, you do.
So tell us about hot cross bunnies.
Hot cross buns are actually, again, street food. They've been that way for ages in England and in Europe. The vendors of these little pastries, which were very popular around Easter time, about in the spring, the vendors would sing, hot cross buns, one a penny, two a penny, hot cross buns. If you have no daughters, give them to your sons, one a penny, two a penny, hot cross buns. Hot cross buns, little small yeast-raised pastries. They were decorated this way decorated and celebrated even in ancient Babylonian Egypt, but the familiar hot cross buns date back to England in the 1300s, and they were served during Good Friday and given, along with those eggs, to far-traveling churchgoers on Easter Sunday. So a recipe is just making a nice, sweet, yeast-raised bun, and this one is...
Now, they're not too sweet, usually.
No. This has a little sugar in it, but it's flavored with cinnamon, cloves, nutmeg, and currants, and finely diced candied orange peels. And you let those little things raise. What makes them hot cross buns is traditionally they'd be raised in little circles, and you would cut a cross in them, indicating the Passion of Christ sort of thing. So you'd have a cross in it. But you do not have to do that. You can also just make a little drizzle of icing. And my recipe here calls for lemon frosting icing to make a little cross on top of the hot cross buns.
I have to say, this year I was looking at hot cross bun recipes because making them at home is fun. It is a yeasted recipe, so you need to make it one day and let it rise and da-da-da-da-da. So glancing through the internet options, I would say if you're going to pick a recipe off the internet, my experience is hot cross buns can be kind of dry and maybe you'd like them a little bit more sweet. So if you're going to bother to bake them, pick a recipe that's got a little more butter in it or some kind of shortening. And a little more sugar rather than less.
It's a treat after
all. Yeah. But I the last time I baked them, I really enjoyed them. So
yeah, good. What you put a special flavor? What kind of flavoring do you put in?
I think the raisin one is traditional. Some dried fruits, right?
Dried fruits. Okay.
I might have used currants too. Mm-hmm. You can doll it up. You could put some dried cherries or cranberries in it. You know. Make it your own, but it was kind of fun for, early morning Easter-y thing.
Very good. Hot cross buns. You're listening to KHOI, and this is the Donna Lana Kitchen, tasty radio for the heart of Iowa.
Thank you.
Donna Lana Kitchen. That was a tune, Little Rabbit, played by the Barn Owl Band. So we've been talking about eggs, and we've been talking about hard-boiled eggs, but sometimes you want to avoid that hard-boiled thing and have scrambled eggs for breakfast, okay? So here is a little note about making scrambled eggs. Now, you wouldn't think you could screw them up, but yes, you can screw up scrambled
right,
eggs.
Right, and this comes from, what's the magazine? Cook's Illustrated, right, which is known for its meticulousness in detailing.
I know, they kind of overdo things, but if you realize that somebody's got to test this stuff out, and here's what they came up with in regard to scrambled eggs. If you want tender scrambled eggs with big, pillowy curds, don't blast eggs over high heat. Sure, it gets breakfast on the table in a hurry, but it produces dried out, rubbery scrambled eggs. And don't keep the heat low. It might prevent the eggs from overcooking, but the result will be loose, wet scrambled eggs. So, for perfect scrambled eggs, do start the cooking over medium-high heat. And then, when your spatula leaves trail through the eggs, reduce the heat to low and continue cooking for 30 to 60 seconds. Really, once they start cooking, they set up fast. So, question, Donna, do you add liquid to your scrambled eggs when you make them?
It depends on my mood. I mean, here's the thing. Some people like their scrambled eggs dry. Some people like them wet. There's a method I like where I put some butter oil in the pan and then I crack the eggs. And then I let them cook as if I'm not going to make scrambled eggs. So that the yolks are sitting there and I move the whites around to get them to cook. And then at the very end, I like to puncture the yolks so that I have more yolky bits within the whites. Now, other people can't stand that, and you have to beat them like crazy so that you don't see the yolk and the white. It's a very individual sort of thing.
So get out there with your spoon, your whisk, and your eggs, and your hot, and your pan. Remember, start cooking on medium high, and then when your spatula leaves a trail through the eggs, you can cook it for another 30 to 60 seconds. Scrambled eggs. Let's talk more about breakfast.
Well, I was thinking about Easter brunch. That is a tradition along with Easter hats and Easter bunnies and which brought me to asparagus.
That's good.
Although it's too early to have asparagus around here, we are starting to see a lot of it in the market. It's obviously coming from the southern areas of the country. So asparagus, my favorite way of cooking asparagus is, well, first of all, you have to start with breaking the woody ends off of it. And there's that little thing where you take each spear individually and you kind of wiggle it in your fingers, and where it snaps is where you put, you know, you, because no point in wasting it and throwing away more than you need to, but the woody ends are no good. So you get it all cleaned up. Now, I like to roast asparagus. In fact, most people, I think, steam it is the general practice. However, once you start roasting asparagus, you probably will never go back again, because roasting asparagus, as in all vegetables that you roast, it sort of concentrates the flavor as opposed to steaming, where the water kind of carries away some of the flavor. So I just spray a baking sheet, or else use my Silpat and, arrange the asparagus in a single layer. And then I crank the oven up at least, 400 or so. You make it really nice and hot, and you really preheat it, because it does not take long to cook asparagus. It's hard to, it's very easy to overcook asparagus. So once you've got them all lined up on the baking tray, and then I use a quick spray of olive oil or something on the top, then you stick it in, and all I can say is, you know, because it depends on the thickness of the asparagus. The thicker the asparagus, the longer it's going to have to stay in. But my recommendation is cook it less than you think, right? And then, you know, you can start to see it visually transform a little bit. It looks a little cooked and you don't want it withered, but you want it, you know, not raw. And then the other thing is to cool it quickly by, I just pull my pan out of the oven and I have a, you know, a cleared space on my counter and I just roll it right off onto the counter and spread them out so that they're not, the heat of each spear is not affecting the next, so it cools more
quickly.
That's
true, because if you take it out, well, like cookies,
they're going to go on cooking.
The cookie sheet is still hot. It's still cooking.
Yeah, and I spread them out on the counter and let them cool as quickly as possible. Then, of course, if you're thinking about asparagus, in my mind, that just runs to Hollandaise sauce. And Easter, you know, you're thinking, oh, Eggs Benedict or that sort of thing. It's because Hollandaise sauce, I love Hollandaise sauce, but you know, for me, it needs to be a rare treat because it is very, it's not hard to make, but it is very rich. It takes a lot of butter, which is the delicious thing about it. So of course, if you're thinking of the classic, I think this is why people order them at restaurants, but don't be intimidated by Hollandaise sauce. It's actually quite easy to make. So, you know, the classic Eggs Benedict is, of course, an English muffin, and you toast it, and then you put some ham on it, and then a fried egg, basically.
Is it fried egg? Or
is it poached?
I think it's poached, because I remember it being ever so nice and runny. I like runny.
Well, you could fry it, too.
Okay, fry it.
As long as it's sunny side up, because it needs to be runny. And then, of course, it's topped with a Hollandaise sauce. So I made some the other day, and I was, you know, looking through the internet to see what kind of recipes were available. I settled on one that was called Julia Child's Hollandaise Sauce.
Well, she ought to know.
Yeah, it's the classic. And so it's 3 egg yolks. So you put the whites somewhere else and a tablespoon of water and a tablespoon of lemon juice. So you kind of whisk the eggs. Now, she doesn't use a double boiler, at least not in this version, although you can use a double boiler. The thing is, you don't want to cook it too much too fast. So you start out by taking your 3 egg yolks, your tablespoon of water, and your tablespoon of fresh lemon juice.
Ah.
And you whisk them till they're all really, really, you know, mixed in and kind of fluffy together. Then you put it over a heat and you keep whisking it while it's warming up. And then it will start to thicken and fluff up a little bit more. And then you start adding, they say, 6 to 8 ounces of very soft, unsalted butter.
That's a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot. So I actually, I got to 5 and I stopped.
but you
cut it into pieces and you drop them in one at a time and you whisk them into the egg and lemon mixture and keep going. And you can occasionally lift it off the heat. You don't want it to be too hot. So you're waiting till the butter starts to melt and emulsify into the mixture.
Yeah, this is tricky. It sounds like you don't want to make it too hot or you're going to end up with scrambled eggs.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah.
You're hitting more for pudding.
Well, this is why people are using a double boiler, but you also can move it on and off the heat, you know, because you're not making, you know, a heavy panful. You're just making a little bit. And then afterwards, she added a dash of cayenne, salt to taste, and white ground pepper. Well, I didn't really do that. I just put, well, there, this recipe is from the period in time where they thought if you added black pepper, it would put specks in your perfect sauce. So they suggested using white pepper. So I just went ahead and put the black pepper in because I love black pepper. Having made this, first of all, it doesn't make that much. So I would double this recipe. And, you know, I felt like it was an awful lot of butter. Maybe 4 pieces of 4 ounces of butter. That's a half a stick of butter.
For three eggs.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. And then if you're doubling it, it's a very rich and lovely thing. And of course you can go on adding up to the 8 ounces of butter, you know, after all, you know, as my mother used to say, you might as well throw in the tail with the hide if you're going to eat hollandaise sauce. So.
Well, that sounds tasty.
Sorry. She was from Missouri. The tail with the hide, you know. A lovely thing to do is to take your asparagus that's been roasted, wrap a little piece of prosciutto around it, line them up on a platter, and then pour the hollandaise over it. Delicious.
It's a celebration.
It's Easter brunch, you know, and if you've already had your hot cross buns early in the morning, you know, and then you put your Easter bonnet on it, and then you go to church, and then you come home, and then you have brunch, you know. I mean,
good.
This is... And early morning, you got to do the Easter egg hunt, too.
We can do that, yeah.
Yeah.
All those... See?
Yeah.
We can do these. Oh, and also, as a service to our listeners, hollandaise sauce. That's hollandaise. I had to look it up this
week.
Well,
because it was attributed to the Dutch originally.
There you go.
Yeah, that's
hollandaise sauce. Very good.
Yeah, go figure.
Very
right.
Good.
Yeah. So, happy Easter to everyone. It's coming right up.
Very good. Are you, for later in the day, do you have any advice for... Often lamb is cooked.
Well, yes, that's it. Yeah, for the brunch or even, for the Sunday after church dinner. Spring and lamb go together, you know. We have a lot of good lamb available, right? Mm-hmm. In fact, people traditionally cook either a ham or a lamb, right? Ham or a lamb for Easter. I would suggest, if you could find it, cook the rabbit for Easter.
Oh, good. I should have looked this up. I know there's times of the year that you shouldn't eat wild rabbit, and I'm not quite sure what that is. But there are also domestic rabbits, which have a lot more meat on them. Anyway, bunny would be fine for Easter.
That's right.
So you can cover up the ears of all the little children eating now, listening now. But rabbit is not a bad thing to eat.
No, and rabbit is wonderful. Iowa wild rabbits, if you can get your hands on one, are absolutely delicious. And the only thing you need to know when cooking a rabbit, as you do with some other game, is it's not got a lot of fat on it. So the French tradition is you cook the rabbit with some bacon.
Wouldn't they? Of course,
they would. Of course.
Very good. Good. Well, I have I ran across another Easter recipe. And I have made this in the past. It is called Finnish Easter bread. It has lots of, it is a yeast raised bread. Yeast raised recipe, including cardamom, lemon peel, orange peel, raisins,
ooh,
almonds, and it has some rye flour in it too. But what is amazing about the Finnish Easter bread is its quantity. I don't know why they make it so big, but get this. This mushroom shaped Easter bread is a Finnish tradition, is rich with butter and milk and the pungent flavors of citrus and cinnamon. Traditionally, this bread is baked in a milking pail to celebrate the birth of spring calves and the abundance of dairy foods. So it doesn't have to be a whole pail, but it is a big recipe. It goes into a pail-shaped thing. It poofs over the top, make kind of a mushroom top.
It's like those old recipes for coffee can bread. Do you remember that? When we bought the big round red tins of Folgers coffee and then used them to bake in. Yeah.
There it is. I've made that in the past.
Recipe doesn't look too different from hot cross buns. It just comes out a different shape.
And quantity. My goodness, yes. But I have made this in the past. And almonds and raisins and lemon peel. That's all good. It's all good. That's another Easter thing. There is the traditional Finnish name for this, and I won't even try it because it has all kinds of A's in it, and all the A's have dots over the top of it, and there's like 20 letters in this name. And I'll just say it's a traditional Finnish Easter bread. There it is. You're listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. For more information, go to www.khoifm.org.
She's dead and gone to glory. She's dead and gone to glory. She's dead and gone to glory. She's dead and gone to glory.
Welcome back. That's some more. The tune Little Rabbit. I mentioned the website to find the webpage for the community radio station, KHOI. That is a real fine part of central Iowa. On that Donalana Kitchen part of the KHOI website, khoifm.org, there is you can find past shows. You can find a picture of us if you can't get enough of the Donalana Kitchen. And there is a recipe page. Kind of put things there in case you want to try them out. And I ran across some things that I think would taste really good. Now, I'm always up for cookies. And so there's two really good cookie recipes on there. And they sort of remind me of spring. One is a lemon cumin cookie. That's in there.
Ooh, that sounds like a good combination.
And a rosemary citrus cookie. And as I recall, both of them are a butter cookie that are rolled and it used to be called refrigerator cookies. You roll them and let them sit in the, as a log of dough in the refrigerator for a while and then cut them. They're rich, they're good. So, lemon cumin cookies and rosemary citrus cookies on the Donalana Kitchen Show recipe page, which you can find by going to www.khoifm.org. Go to talk shows, go to the Donalana Kitchen and find out more about us and find out more about this fine radio station. All kinds of good people do things on this radio station. You can have things in your ears that are really fine. So, Donna, you've got some advice for fruit and vegetable purchasing.
Right. The Environmental Working Group, which does a marvelous job of helping consumers sort out all kinds of what's in your food, as well as what's in your cosmetics. They have extensive lists of, especially with cosmetics and sunscreens, they've done a big thing on sunscreens, of kind of things that you might not want to be putting on your skin and in your body. And they list by brand and they say what's in it and why. So it's a wonderful resource. The other thing they do is every year they publish a list called their Dirty Dozen. And the Dirty Dozen is fruits and vegetables that have the largest amounts of pesticides on them. So, you know, what they're basically saying is with these particular 12 ingredients, if you can do it, if you can find it, if you can afford it, it's best to buy organic for these varieties. So here is the Dirty Dozen list. Top number one is strawberries.
Oh, my.
I know. And for Easter, it's, well, especially when I lived in California, at Easter time in the farmers markets, the strawberries are just divine. They're coming like really ripe, fresh picked out of the fields. They're as good as homegrown. And if you're shopping at the farmers market, of course, you can ask if it's organically grown or if it's unsprayed. But all of those strawberries that you will now see in the supermarket, particularly for Easter, you know, it's the number one fruit that has the most pesticides on it.
So I have a question. So what about washing these strawberries?
Well, first of all, strawberries, the more you wash them, the worse they get. They're not, yeah, you can rinse them, but most of the pesticides used in fruits do not necessarily wash off. Some of them do, but some of them are like in every cell of the fruit or vegetable. That, you know, depends on which pesticides we're talking about. So just, this is an overall list where they test a lot of fruits and vegetables and they pick the ones that have the most amounts of pesticides on them. Spinach is number two. Number three and this is a little upsetting, kale, collards, and mustard greens. So all those leafy greens that we really, really need to be eating, the cooked ones. That's spinach number two and kale, collards, and mustard greens for number three. Then there's nectarines are number four. Apples are number five.
Oh, my. So an apple a day? Well, maybe not so good.
Well,
here.
Organic apple.
Okay.
Right. Grapes is number six. This is a usual one is on the list, is bell peppers and hot peppers. Cherries are number eight. Peaches are number nine. Pears are number 10. 11 is celery, surprising. And 12 is tomatoes.
Ooh.
They also note that a small amount of sweet corn, papaya, and summer squash sold in the United States is produced from genetically modified seed. Buy organic varieties of these crops if you want to avoid genetically modified produce.
Yes. I'm not surprised to find celery on that list because of all the things. Celery spends its whole life sucking up things from the soil. It has got so much water in it. That's its job. Of course, everything else does too. But I think of celery as something that has just is holding a whole lot of stuff. And if it's been surrounded by pesticides, I suppose, yes, it would have a lot of that stuff in it. Yes,
it's,
it would.
It's also hard to grow here in Iowa, isn't it?
Oh, celery is... I don't even try it. For one thing, it needs... It's not a Frankenfood sort of thing because people have always done it, but it takes a lot of fuss. You have to pour a lot of water and nutrients to it.
Oh, it's cool. Watery.
And celery does not naturally turn out into these stalky, light-colored, tender things. To have celery happening, you have to blanch it. You have to grow it between two boards or something that keeps the light off the side and trains it to...
So it's a little bit like white asparagus.
Yeah, it's kind
thing.
Of like a bonsai vegetable. And just think of how much celery we go through. I mean, that's kind of one of the throw-it-in-the-cart things along with your dozen eggs or whatever. And it takes a bit of a fuss. Celery doesn't happen as we see it in the grocery store. It's not a quick thing or an easy thing to grow.
No, but it's usually inexpensive. So the Environmental Working Group also has what they are calling the Clean 15. So this is the produce that has the least amount of pesticides. So you can kind of, stock up on these. Avocados is number one. Sweet corn is number two. Pineapple is number three. Onions, number four. Papaya. Sweet frozen peas. Asparagus is number seven. Honeydew melons, kiwi, cabbage, mushrooms. Number 12 is cantaloupe. 13 is mango. 14 is watermelon. And 15 is sweet potato. So those are the things that you don't have to worry about too much. It's a good thing they're doing both of these lists, okay? So there's the good list and the bad list. The clean... What's it called? The Clean 15 and the Dirty Dozen. That's all on the Environmental Working Group's website.
Good.
And they do this every year, so it's a recalibration every time.
Good to know what we have to think. We have to just think a little bit. Of course, like Donna said, there are organic growers of all this stuff, so it's always a good thing to ask.
Well, and if you don't want to have to find organic produce, it's good to know which ones are the most egregious that maybe you shouldn't either eat so much of, or if you do eat them, maybe you should think a little bit more about buying some organic, like maybe you don't want to feed your kids a lot of non-organic strawberries, for example. These are tough decisions, and, I'm sorry that consumers have to make these choices and that our government is not stepping in to help regulate some of these chemicals. And I must say, once again, that the United States is using a lot of pesticides that have been banned in other countries.
Yeah. It kind of is...
Like European countries.
Like European countries. It's kind of not so heartening to know that once again, the bottom line.
Yeah, the feds are not looking out for our best interests,
no,
I don't think.
There's something called lobbyists, I think, that do a lot of our thinking for us in Washington, D.C. Food lobbyists.
Yeah, those and, pesticide lobbyists.
Pesticide lobbyists. Mm. About that, yeah. Yeah. Well, good. Well, we'll eat mushrooms. We'll eat sweet potatoes, and there are good things. And if you have a garden, go ahead and eat out of your garden. And if you have a garden, also think twice about what you put on it. Just because you see a bug out there, don't kind of panic for the first thing. Just kind of take it easy and realize that they. Fragile thing we're dealing with. It's called the soil. It's called the earth. It's called the natural processes out
there.
Yeah,
the bugs need to eat too, because bugs then the birds eat can too. Eat the bugs. And you
bugs
know,
can eat the bugs, and then there's
goes around and around and around
and around and around. And spring, spring is coming. I'm starting thinking of garden. I've put in some onion plants. This
tell us how many.
Yesterday.
You give us the number here again.
Okay, I planted 1,300 little bitty. Onion seedlings out there, little. I don't plant the bulbs. No, that's. I plant little seedlings that have. I buy them from a place in Texas that has a lot more day length than I do to start seeds. They start seeds.
So they come in the mail.
Comes in the mail.
The live plants come in the mail.
And the UPS guy, or you know, somebody that treat.
It's not Amazon though.
No. The mailman or the delivery person always complains that his truck smells like onions on the day that he delivers. I can't be the only one that gets onions. Of course they smell like onions. I mean, I could think of something worse, perhaps, that it would smell like. But onions, a good first thing for spring. Well, thank you for joining us at our kitchen table today. We talked about eggs, hot cross buns, hollandaise hot sauce, and Donna gave us some shopping advice. I have a few upcoming events here, and this is from an ad in the local paper, and I'm sure other churches are doing this time of year. We think of the Easter story that we tell ourselves, the story of Christ, and the Ascension Lutheran Church in town is this Wednesday, April 13th, is doing a dramatization of the Last Supper. And I thought I should mention that on the Donna Lana Kitchen, being a supper.
Oh, that means somebody has to play Judas.
Oh, dear. All right. Well, this is a drama, music and worship based on a drama by Ernest K. Amirian. Huh? So, light refreshments will be served at the Last Supper dramatization, and that's this Wednesday at the Ascension Lutheran Church here in town. And that's an Easter thing. It's a Last Supper thing.
Oh. Well, and so it's a Passover.
And
this was the Last Supper.
Yeah, they didn't have Easter. Or the Christ story was still in process then, so they had a Passover story. Okay. And also, I want to mention the Central Iowa Barn Dance is back. There will be a barn dance on Saturday, April 23rd at the 130 South Sheldon in Ames. That's in the Casa building here in Ames from 7:30 to 10 p.m. Music by the Barn Owl Band. And I will mention that I will be calling that, yes.
Oh, right. Lana is a dance caller, among other things.
But I'm so glad. And please wear a mask. It is a contact sport, I'll have you know. Please wear a mask. You've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. We come to you live at noon Tuesdays, and repeated 7 p.m. on this fine community radio station. We had music by the Barn Owl Band. And also we're going out with a set of polkas by Neil Hellman. My name is Lana Noctical.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We've had excellent engineering by Mike Murphy. Eat good food and enjoy life.